Today in Jenin is a smaller version of what is happening on all of Palestine. If this superior military machine of the Israelis is incapable of facing a small refugee camp, then how would it face Gaza or the entire West Bank?
Lebanese people who have gathered in several parts across the country in a show of solidarity with the Palestinians say they have also lived through decades of Israeli aggressions against Lebanon, and they believe that resistance is the sole way to end the occupation, as was the case in Lebanon.
There is no other way to face the Israeli occupation than to continue to resist. The Palestinian people tried all means in order to liberate their land. It was a fiasco. So we need now to consolidate the resistance approach and to have a wider solidarity with this resistance, Palestinian resistance, in the occupied territory.
With the Israeli aggression against the Palestinian, they are trying to do that aggression over and over again. And the Palestinian people, starting from Jenin, are trying to liberate first Jenin, but I think it will spread all over Palestine and probably it will go way abroad.
Jenin camp reflects the real bloody face of the Israeli occupation, the loss of innocent lives, the destruction of homes, the displacement of big families. There are the realities that the Israeli occupation can't ignore anymore. Today we are gathering together in a public space to send a powerful message for the Palestinian people and for the resistance that we are showing our unity and we are showing our position against the violence, injustice and the silence in the world.
As you enter any refugee camp in Lebanon, you are greeted with posters for martyrs. And refugees there express their unwavering support for resistance fighters inside Palestine.
We are not in solidarity with Jenin. We are one with Jenin. We, the Palestinians in the diaspora and inside Palestine, are one entity, and what is happening inside Jenin is a step towards the liberation of Palestine and a step towards our return to Palestine. What we saw in Jenin gives us hope that liberation is near.
We've become used to their crimes. They bargained that the old generation is gone, but they were stunned how the new generation is even more steadfast and courageous and ready to face them.
After 2 days of Israeli attacks on Jenin, at least 12 Palestinians were killed and dozens more were injured.
The United Nations says it is alarmed at the scale of Israel's assault on Jenin, yet people of Lebanon and Palestine who have witnessed firsthand decades of Israeli atrocities say there is nothing alarming about the aggression. However, they all have a collective conviction that the resistance will turn victorious. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Out of the classrooms and under the streets, hundreds of thousands of school teachers here and across England on strike for 48 hours this week in what's become a battle for dignity and better wages.
We want to be with our children. We really do. You know, it's coming towards the end of term. We want to enjoy every day with them. But at the same time, we recognise that the fight for children's future has to involve strike action because this government doesn't listen.
There are others who are listening. Parents and students.
These strikes have to happen. Obviously, they're impacting in the short term, but with extra pay, teachers will be more motivated and they can help in the long run rather than them withering out.
And withering out they are. Underfunded and overworked, the teachers are not just striking, they're leaving the profession. Gillian Keegan, who runs the Department of Education, says the government has made a fair and reasonable pay offer to teachers. Yet her department has refused to publish recommendations for allegedly a higher pay offer by the Independent School Teachers Review Body, a decision that unions say risks dragging out the current dispute.
Part of the argument here is how a pay rise should be paid for. The government says schools should use their existing budgets to fund any pay increases. But the teachers have been pushing back, saying the school budgets are already stretched and that any wage rise should be fully funded by the government.
And it's not just the teachers' unions who aren't being heard. Also, workers across the public sector, such as transport and health, who have supported each other over the months. solidarity that has scared the government into responding with a set of draconian laws to make it difficult for strikes to take place. In an atmosphere of uncertainty and with inflation still high, the strikers here are defiant, saying they will push ahead with industrial action until their demands are met. Said Buriza, London.
The burning of the Holy Quran in Sweden has ignited a protest in the capital Sana'a, where U.S. and Israeli flags were set on fire in the streets. Protesters also denounced the latest military operations by the Israeli forces in the occupied West Bank city of Jenin. Members of the Palestinian-based Islamic Jihad resistance movement also attended the rally. They called on the Muslim world to unite and counter the Israeli occupying forces.
We came out to tell the world that we are with Palestinians and with Jenin refugee camp, and we are ready to support them. We in Yemen are ready to go to war with the Israeli enemy, who only seems to understand the language of war and violence.
We came out today to call on the Muslim world to defend the Holy Quran and to support the Palestinian cause, which is the Muslim cause. This is an obligation for Muslims to strive and revive and unite against the enemies of Allah.
Some observers believe Israelis, along with the West, have a hand in promoting those who insult Islam.
The individuals who burned the Holy Quran or who insulted Islam represent the aspirations and stance of the West, which promotes the burning of Quran and protects those who engage in such activities even on the Eid holiday. This is done just to insult Muslims worldwide. We will no longer stay silent.
Many Yemeni protesters we spoke with expressed their willingness to go to war with the Israeli regime and any state that supports insulting Muslims' holy book or occupying Muslim holy lands.
Israeli officials say the military operations in Jenin aim to strike what they call a terrorist hub in the occupied West Bank city. Now the protesters here say the Muslim world should become united against what they describe the terrorist Israeli regime. Yusuf Maudi, Sana'a.
The Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant, the largest of its kind in Europe. President Zelensky has recently warned that Russia has mined it and is imminently planning to create a radiation leak. The IAEA, in a recent visit, say they saw no evidence of those claims, and Russia denies it, warning Ukraine may attempt a terrorist attack of their own.
The power plant. Now, both sides are clearly, in one way or another, taking the potential damage or destruction of it very seriously. Recently, of course, the Novokakhovka Dam was blown up, also along the Dnipro River. Whoever blew that up clearly has very little interest in the safety of local people and of potential ecological disaster. And as this war continues to escalate, many do fear that this plant really is under threat.
Built in the Soviet era and with likely strong Russian anti-air defense, the destruction of the plant would not be easy. Risk has also been mitigated by the reactors being placed in cool shutdown. There is more of a fear that damage around the reactors themselves can lead to a radiation leak. Ukraine has tried hard to retake the plant. In October last year, 600 Ukrainian special forces reportedly crossed the Vaskakovka reservoir in boats in a failed and bloody attempt. The reservoir has now been turned into vast mudflats due to the blowing up of the dam. There is evidence of Ukrainian shelling around the plant, particularly in the nearby town of Energodar, although recent months have been quiet. One shell landed outside the central administration last year. The mayor tells me the plant is secure, but that he fears an attack. I asked him why Ukraine would want to damage it. As well as concerns of a human and ecological disaster, there is an even greater fear that an attack can lead to another dangerous escalation of the conflict. Some officials in the US and UK have warned that a radiation leak would trigger Article 5 of the NATO treaty, meaning NATO would respond as if it were an attack on NATO itself. While some may be plotting an attack, most in the region and beyond will be hoping that the plant stays out of the news. Jenny Miller, Zaporizhzhia.
The Turkish president has condemned the desecration of the Holy Quran in Sweden, saying such an act cannot be evaluated as a freedom of expression. Erdogan hinted that Sweden cannot join NATO while facilitating acts of Islamophobia and harboring terrorists.
The fact that desecration of the Quran took place under police protection in Sweden is a calamity, just as setting fire to church, synagogue or temple of another faith is not freedom. So there can be no freedom to burn the Quran.
Salwan Mumika, a Swedish from Iraqi origins, burned a copy of the Holy Book in Stockholm under police protection. Salwan had already threatened to do so and was able to get a permit from the Swedish government to initiate his act in front of Stockholm's central mosque. This is not the first time such an incident takes place, with the approval of the Swedish government and the protection of its police. This incident comes as Turkish and Swedish foreign ministers and intelligence officials are set to meet in NATO headquarters in Brussels to discuss Sweden and Finland's accession to the bloc. Analysts say Turkish officials will be putting their security concerns and the latest incident on the table.
The incident of burning the Quran and Erdogan's condemnation came a week before a scheduled meeting between the Swedish and Turkish foreign ministers in Brussels to discuss Sweden's accession to NATO. Turkey had suspended talks in January with Sweden after a similar incident took place outside the Turkish embassy in Stockholm. There are two main issues preventing Turkey from accepting Sweden's accession to NATO. One is allowing such incidents to take place, giving permits to do provocation. The second is Sweden's support of PKK members, which Turkey considers as a terrorist group and demands the extradition of their leaders. Turkey cannot hold Sweden's accession to NATO anymore. However, I believe the upcoming meeting will witness an agreement of some sort of, for Turkey cannot step back at this point from its requests.
To join NATO, Sweden needs the approval of all the bloc's current members, including Turkey. Despite NATO leaders showing optimism over Swedish accession to the bloc before a summit later this month, Turkey, who has the second largest army in the bloc, continues to refuse giving its approval. However, it all depends on the meeting of July 6. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
After 2 days, Israeli forces began withdrawing from the refugee camp of Jenin, north of the occupied West Bank, after carrying out one of their large-scale military operations since 2002, where 12 Palestinians were killed and hundreds were wounded. However, clashes on the outskirts of the refugee camp were still taking place, and Israeli forces were still stationed in many areas. About 3,000 people have so far left the camp after the Israeli regime threatened to destroy their homes. Jenin residents are now taking shelter in hospitals, schools, and other places in the city. According to UN figures, some 15,000 Palestinians live in Jenin refugee camp.
We expect that the confrontation will be wider and because of the Israeli policy, because of the Israeli aggressive behavior, and because of this fascist government whose ministers are declaring themselves as fascists and are saying that Palestinians have one of three options, either to immigrate or die or accept a life of subjugation to Israeli fascism. That's something that Palestinians will never accept and will never stop their struggle for their freedom.
It says the raid will be underway as long as the exchange of fire continues. The military says it has identified 10 additional targets to destroy in Jenin refugee camp. It says the mission must be accomplished, that is, targeting Palestinian fighters, arresting those described as wanted individuals, and capturing their ammunition. Palestinians say Israel is committing war crimes in the refugee camp in an effort to prevent future resistance and bringing down the Jenin Brigades, the newly formed resistance group that's comprised of fighters from different Palestinian armed groups.
The situation in Jenin and the period of the Israeli military aggression depends on what is going on the ground. Israel is seeking an achievement, military achievement, by maybe killing the biggest number of fighters there. But this thing is not happening now. So the options of Israel are getting narrow and narrow by time. If they fail to achieve this, it could be a failure for the total aggression in Jenin.
Palestinians have staged a general strike across the occupied West Bank, including the city of Al-Quds, to protest the ongoing Israeli large-scale operation in Jenin. The strike has led to the suspension of all economic activities and closure of educational institutions across the occupied West Bank. Shops and private institutions in Palestinian areas also closed down.
The Israeli regime might succeed in increasing the sense of satisfaction in its community after Jenin's militia raid. However, it might not be aware that what they see as achievements will definitely lead to a fertile ground to raise another generation adherent to the resistance, not only in Jenin, but across the occupied West Bank. Mona Kandil, occupied Ramallah.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
Supplication on Sundays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. In the name of Allah, from whom I hope for nothing but bounty, and from whom I fear nothing but justice. I rely only upon His word, and I cling only to His cord. In Thee I seek sanctuary, O possessor of pardon and good pleasure. From wrong and enmity, and from the changes of time, and the recurrence of sorrows, and from the striking of mishaps, and from the expiration of my term before preparation and readiness. From Thee I seek guidance to that wherein is righteousness and being set right. From Thee I seek help in that which is linked to success and favorable response. Thee I beseech for the garment of well-being and its completion, and for the covering of health and its permanence. I seek refuge in Thee, my Lord, from the goadings of the Satans. And I seek protection in Thy sovereignty from the injustice of the sovereigns. So accept my past prayers and fasting, and make my tomorrow and what is after better than my present hour and my today. And exalt me in my clan and my people, and protect me in my waking and my sleeping. For Thou art Allah, the best guardian, and Thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, I am quit before Thee on this day of mine and on all Sundays that follow it, of associating others with Thee and of heresy. And I devote my supplication sincerely to Thee, addressing myself to Thy response. And I observe the acts of obedience to You for the hope of Your rewards. So bless Muhammad, the best of Thy creation, the summoner to Thy truth. Exalt me with Thy exaltation, which is never made to suffer loss. And protect me with Thy eye, which never sleeps. And seal my affair by cutting me off from everything but Thee and my life with forgiveness. Surely Thou art the all-forgiving, the all-compassionate. Thank you.
Bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. The Israeli regime has killed three more Palestinians in the occupied West Bank. This comes just in the wake of unprecedented raids and aerial attacks in recent days on the Jenin refugee camp, which left at least a dozen Palestinians dead. In retaliation, Palestinians have carried out some operations against Israeli forces, and the resistance movement Hamas and Islamic Jihad have vowed to take revenge and continue resistance until the liberation of the occupied territories. A group of UN experts have warned that Israel's latest attacks on the Jenin refugee camp could amount to war crimes and crimes against humanity. But will these words by international bodies ever translate into any concrete action and stop Israeli atrocities against the Palestinians? Joining us on Spotlight, we have Elijah Magni, a journalist and political analyst, joining us from Brussels. And also we have Khalid Barakat, spokesperson of the Masar Badil movement, joining us from Vancouver.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Mr. Magni in Brussels. We know that the Israeli regime has increased its deadly acts of aggression against Palestinians since late December 2022. Just today, three more Palestinians were killed. That follows the large-scale assault earlier in the week on the Jenin refugee camp, which killed another 12 Palestinians. Mr. Magni, give us your perspective on this heavy escalation of violence by the Israelis.
Thank you for having me. It is obvious that this is an operation just to support Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who faces a very turmoil domestically, where many people don't want him, the people don't want his government to continue, particularly with the very far right extremist members like Smotrich and Ben-Gvir controlling the government. And this is how he managed to shut down all the protests against him and unite the front, the opposition, and those with him, behind him, when it is regarding the attack against the Palestinian. Secondly, we understand that his main objective, the second main objective, is the exodus of the Palestinian. So we've seen between 3,000 and 4,000 Palestinian who fled the Jenin camp, that are between 14 and 17,000 only. We have seen how he destroyed the infrastructure. So he went for destructing the water, the electricity, the internet, the landline communication. This is not an attack to hunt particular identity or individual, but it is to destroy the camp and make it impossible to live for the civilians. So the objective of Israel is exactly what Benjamin Netanyahu has done in the Jenin camp, and he continued to do, for a simple reason, that he's not accountable. The international community supports him. The only thing that the West is saying that they are concerned, we've heard how the European ambassador, who said nothing about the attack against the Jenin camp, but spoke on the first occasion when there was an attack against the Israeli gathering in Tel Aviv. So all the indignation from the West comes whatever the Palestinians react, which is their full right according to the UN Charter to be the resistance and to resist against the occupation forces, that they're not even behaving as occupation forces, because occupation forces should behave by bringing construction to the country and construction to the inhabitant, to the original inhabitant, while what they do is just to push the Palestinian outside their own country.
Khaled Barakat, a group of UN experts has warned that the scope of Israel's latest aerial and ground attacks on the Jenin refugee camp may constitute war crimes, and the attacks constitute collective punishment of the Palestinian population. In your perspective, what was the motive behind the Jenin raid by the Israelis?
Well, obviously, the aggression against Jenin was to uproot the Palestinian resistance from the camp in order to achieve a Israeli political objective, and that is annexing the West Bank. That's what Israel wants. At the end, they want the land, and they cannot fully control the land and build colonies with the Palestinian resistance that is growing by the day in the West Bank. So Israel finds itself also in a mid of an internal crisis, and they try to export this internal crisis at the expense of the Palestinian people by not just aggression against the Jenin and the city and the camp, but also across the West Bank. Now, in terms of war crimes and United Nations reports, we have seen this so many times. Countless times of United Nations viewing what Israel is doing is a war crime. I mean, building colonies in an occupied land is a war crime. Displacing Palestinians from their own homeland is a war crime. The siege on Gaza is a war crime. And we know that Israel is finding a lot of difficulties in dealing with the growing resistance in the West Bank. We have said before the aggression that this is going to be a failure, and the Palestinian resistance is going to come victorious out from this battle. And now, Palestinians feel that before this aggression is not like after the Jenin battle. Today, the Palestinian resistance is putting a platform that it is very important for Palestinians to escalate their resistance confronting Israeli war crimes. And these Israeli colonies are going to be a very difficult project. It's not going to be an easy one from now on, as the Palestinian resistance is focusing on accumulating more strength, and at the same time knowing exactly where, when, and the objectives of any of their military operations. Now, President Ibrahim Raisi was very correct when he said that this aggression reminds Palestinians of the 1948 Nakba, because that's exactly what happened, where Zionist, gangs and criminals, attacked Palestinian villages and towns, and they were displacing Palestinians. Now, they do that all the time. And in the case of Gaza, for example, that it's, under siege for 17 years, they can blockade Gaza and make it difficult for people to rebuild. In the case of the West Bank, I think Israel is going to find the difficulty to do that, and Palestinians immediately got engaged in the rebuilding process.
Elijah Magnianos, believe the fact that Israeli forces are now targeting Palestinian civilians is a sign that the regime is becoming weaker in the face of the resistance. Do you see it in that light as well?
Well, I think the objective of Benjamin Netanyahu in the illegal attack against Jenin camp did not reach its objectives. Therefore, we've seen a failure, because the Palestinians, first of all, are becoming stronger. Second, they are united in one operation room. Third, the young generation is picking up more than expected, and it is determined to return the land. And fourth, we've seen the retaliation from the Palestinian every time there is a terrorist Israeli attack against them, to uproot them, as your guest rightly said, from the West Bank and from Jerusalem and other parts of Palestine. So all these objectives have failed. This is why we've seen the Israelis just doing this small operation for a couple of days for domestic use. But because the international community is silent, and because they can do whatever they do, they can get away with it. However, internally, every time we've seen the Israelis attacking the Palestinian, we have seen a retaliation. We have seen retaliation from Gaza. We've seen retaliation from Lebanon. We've seen retaliation from the Islamic Jihad. We've seen retaliation from all over Palestine. So yes, the new generation, the new Palestinian generation, is more driven to liberate this land, and this is what caused the failure of all the Israeli plan to try to curb the Palestinian will and to submit them.
Khaled Barakat, talking about the Palestinian retaliation and resistance, Hamas has hailed the resistance against the recent Israeli raid on the Jenin refugee camp as being a victory. In a statement, the Qassam Brigades, that's the military arm of Hamas, described it as a great victory. It emphasized that Jenin and other occupied cities will remain focal points to inflict painful blows to the enemy. Will the growing Palestinian capabilities now pose a major challenge for Tel Aviv? In other words, should the Israelis start to feel less safe now?
Absolutely, and not just in the West Bank and the colonies in the West Bank, but all over Palestine, from the river to the sea. The Palestinian resistance have absolute right to retaliate anywhere in Palestine. And now the equations have changed. There is a direct relationship between the Palestinian resistance in Gaza, the West Bank, and occupied Palestine 48. There is a camp of resistance in the region that is also accumulating more strength, and the coordination in a united front is not just, in theories and in political terms and statements, but in actual programs that is being implemented on the ground, particularly with the support of the Lebanese resistance. Now, we also have to say that this is a Palestinian popular path. It's not just the Palestinian resistance faction. This is a resistance supported by the vast majority of the Palestinian people in Palestine and in diaspora. And the vast majority of Palestinians today, even in elections, when you go do, student elections or labor elections in Palestine, the pro-resistance, slates, you win massively these elections, which indicates that the Palestinian people are sick and tired of this futile path of so-called negotiations that has been going on for the past 30 years. They see that their land is being confiscated and stolen by the Israeli Zionist regime, and settlers who comes from Berlin and London and New York to settle in Palestine, and they're armed criminal Zionist settlers who comes to the West Bank and to Palestine in general carrying guns. And not just that, some of them have actually training in U.S. Army and in Canadian Army and in European armies. And that's why we always say that the Palestinian resistance have the right to target any settler in Palestine, anywhere in Palestine, from the river to the sea, because they're all paramilitary and mercenaries who comes to Palestine to to massacre the Palestinian people and to steal their land and to build a racist, apartheid, colonialist system in the heart of the Arab and Muslim world. And that's why also Palestinians see themselves that they're not alone, and they are being supported by a very strong camp in the region led by Iran and by the Lebanese resistance and the Palestinian resistance. And this is the path of the Arab people now. And we see that. We see the mass demonstrations and support that Palestinians are also seeing from Algeria to Yemen to Lebanon to Syria to Jordan. The Arab masses are expressing also their support for the Palestinian resistance. And this is very important after we witnessed 12 years of chaos and wars and sectarian wars that imperialist power was pushing in the region. Also, the sure. Palestinian victory comes after, you know, this negotiations and political new relations between Iran and Saudi Arabia, and we think that this is important and it helps Palestine.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Elijah Magni, on that same issue, are the Israelis, in your opinion, worried about a united Palestinian resistance front, especially now that the Palestinians have shown what a united resistance front is capable of?
Of course it is worried, because we have seen always limited operation against the Palestinians, and we have seen how the Israeli government is trying to avoid a long war, afraid of the participation of other front, particularly when Yemen, Iraq, Syria, Lebanon all expressed their readiness to participate into the attack against the Israelis if the resistance in Palestine demand and requires their intervention. This is why the Israelis are always extremely afraid, particularly in the light of seeing how the axis of the resistance that is formed from all those countries that I just mentioned, is in control of advanced missiles, advanced weapons, drones. We've seen Iran declaring its possession of new hypersonic missiles that can hit Israel anywhere. Hezbollah is capable of hitting any target in Israel and any area in Israel. We've seen how Hamas bombed Israel for many days non-stop with hundreds of missiles and rockets. We've seen the Islamic Jihad, that is a very good small group, managed to hold on against the Israelis for several days in the first and the last two attacks against the Islamic Jihad. So all that is, the equation is changing. The Israelis used to be the strongest army in the Middle East. That is true. However, opposing the Israelis, the resistance was weak. Today, the resistance has acquired a different level of weaponry, intelligence gathering, electronic warfare, missiles and drones, capable of facing Israel and hurting the Israelis. And this is why the Israelis are afraid of widening any attack in the future, because they are concerned about a united front, and because they are concerned about multiple fronts starting against the Israelis, when we have seen the Israelis incapable of maintaining the bombing of Gaza itself or the attack on the Islamic Jihad only. So yes, there is a big difference, and we've seen how the axis of the resistance is managing to impose deterrence on Israel.
Khaled Barakat, talking about the impunity of the Israelis, Hamas has said the silence of the international community emboldens Israel to continue its aggression. Hezbollah's Seyed Hassan Nasrallah has said the world turning a blind eye to the Israeli killing of women and children is alarming. And The UN's very own human rights chief, Volker Türk, said, quote, "For the violence to end, the occupation must end." Why is that not happening?
Because of the United States of America. The United States fully support Israel politically, militarily. They provide them with $4 billion a year of military assistance. They cover Israeli crimes in international scene. The United States, Britain, Germany, their Palestinian blood are on their hands because Israel is their project, and they don't deal with Israel as just a friendly state of them. It's their actual project that they support in the heart of the Arab and Muslim world, and that is, the goal is to divide the people of the region and to conquer the region and to weaken any real renaissance of the people of the region and of West Asia. Now, the United States is doing this because they are serving their own imperialist and colonialist interest. But let me just give you an example of how things changed on the ground in Palestine. In 2002, when Israel launched its aggression against the Jenin camp, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, the general secretary of Hezbollah, then offered the Israelis to release the Zionist soldiers and general Hezbollah had captured, and Israel refused because at that time the balance of power was in the interest of Israel and of Sharon Mufaz coalition. So they continued their operation against the camp and they destroyed the entire camp. Now, and in these days, after 20 years, they couldn't do that. And not because the Palestinian resistance in the camp is more stronger, but because the balance of power in the region and in the world is changing. And at the same time, Israel is not the same anymore. Israel is deteriorating from inside. It's a corrupted regime. We began to see that the surplus power that Israel enjoys, they cannot use it against the Palestinian people. It's basically useless. And, we see how Israel is shifting more and more towards becoming a fascist, society, not just a state. And they're basically, as they are divided, the Palestinian people are united. And that's how things are changing on the ground.
And one last thought in from Mr. Elijah Magni. How do you explain the Western mainstream media's silence regarding events in the occupied territories?
Well, we have seen Joseph Borrell coming out and giving us in Brussels a communique saying strongly that Israel killed 150 civilians last year. But what he has done, nothing. After reading communique and expressing his concerns, this is what he has done. He just closed the document and then walked away. So how can we expect the mainstream media that is controlled by the Israelis, that nobody dares to express any criticism of Israel? The BBC did that a couple of days ago with an interview with the former Prime Minister, Naftali Bennett, and there was a big scandal how the BBC can dares to ask why the Israelis are killing civilians and children. So there is a full control of mainstream media. There is a general attitude to close an eye on what the Israelis are doing. And there is a general understanding that Israel is like the American. They are not accountable for any crime they committed. Therefore, we do not expect from neither the mainstream media nor all the Western officials to do anything against Israel.
Very well. Thanks a lot, gentlemen. Elijah Magnier joining us from Brussels. Mr. Khaled Barakat joining us from Vancouver. That's all the time we have for tonight's show. Thank you for contributing to our program, and also a special thanks to you for staying with us on tonight's Spotlight. It's good night for now.
From east to west, throughout the vast land of Iran, you're listening to IRIB English Radio.
in the limelight.
In Britain, the government is drawing up plans to drop Britain's flagship £11.6 billion climate and nature funding pledge. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. The government is drawing up plans to drop Britain's flagship £11.6 billion climate and nature funding pledge, The Guardian can reveal, with Prime Minister Rishi Sunak accused of betraying populations most vulnerable to global heating. The disclosure provoked fury from former ministers and representatives of vulnerable countries, who accused Prime Minister Sunak of making false promises. A leaked briefing note to ministers, given to the Foreign Office and seen by The Guardian, lays out the reasons for dropping Britain's contribution to meeting the global $100 billion a year commitment to developing countries. The leaked briefing says, "Our commitment to double our international climate finance to £11.6 billion was made back in 2019 when we were still at 0.7% of GDP spent on international aid and pre-COVID pandemic. It adds that to meet it by the deadline would be a huge challenge because of new pressures, including help for Ukraine being included in the aid budget. To meet the £11.6 billion target by 2026, government officials have calculated that it would have to spend 83% of the Foreign Office's official development assistance budget on the International Climate Fund. Civil servants said in the leaked document that this would squeeze out room for other commitments such as humanitarian commitments. It also claimed that factors such as the war in Ukraine and debt relief could make it even more difficult to meet the target. This is because the government has cut international aid spending to 0.5% of gross national income since the announcement was made, squeezing budgets across the board, and because ministers did not spend most of the money allocated to the climate fund over the past few years, leaving the majority to be spent by 2026. Britain spent £5.8 billion over the previous 5 years, up to 2021. This was doubled to spend £11.6 billion between April of 2021 and March of 2026, £3 billion of which was earmarked for protecting and restoring nature for meeting commitments made in COP15 summit last December. The projects funded included building renewable energy, helping create low-pollution transport and protecting forests in sensitive areas around the globe. Former Foreign Office Minister Zach Goldsmith, who resigned last week, citing what he termed Rishi Sunak's apathy towards the environment, said this would shred the UK's international reputation. Former Foreign Office Minister Zach Goldsmith told The Guardian, "The low levels of expenditure so far, combined with the decision to define our spending on Afghan and Ukrainian refugees here in the United Kingdom as aid, something that other countries have not done, means it is going to be virtually impossible to honour our environmental promise. The hockey stick of spending will be so steep that whoever is in government after the next election would have to savagely slash humanitarian, education, health, and other funding in order to hit the £11.6 billion target. So even while it is technically possible to claim we will honour that pledge, the next government will simply not be able to do so. Small island states in particular, whose votes in the United Nations are no less valuable than ours and which are routinely needed by us, will be left feeling utterly betrayed. Given around 25 Commonwealth countries or small island states, as well as our interests in the Pacific Ocean and the Caribbean, the geopolitical repercussions will be far-reaching and our reputation as a reliable partner will simply be shredded. Last week, the British government's statutory climate advisers published a report finding that the government was missing the majority of its climate targets and had lost its position as a world leader on climate change. Countries due to receive the funding have expressed dismay at the prospect of a funding cut. Lee White, Gabon's environmental minister, said, "The climate crisis is such that every country has to contribute to the solution. Gabon is 88% covered by tropical rainforest. We have maintained deforestation below 0.1% over 5 decades and net absorb over 100 million tons of carbon dioxide annually. Few countries are doing more for the planet. Developed nations, particularly the United Kingdom, which was the origin of the Industrial Revolution, have to do the heavy lifting. But all too often, they make false promises and fail to provide true leadership or even honour their modest financial commitments." The British newspaper The Daily Mail has also covered the same story and tells us more. The British government is drawing up plans to drop Britain's flagship £11.6 billion climate and nature funding pledge. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak has been accused of betraying populations in countries which are most vulnerable to global warming. The decision is likely to diminish Britain's standing on the world stage as international groups accuse it of squandering its reputation. Claire Shakya, the strategic director of the International Institute for Environmental and Development, said, "A decision by this government to drop the pledge of £11.6 billion in climate finance is somewhat unsurprising, given cuts they have already made to programmes that would have used the funding. But it's no less disappointing. Not only could that funding have helped some of the most vulnerable people already facing drought, flooding and wildfires brought on by climate change, its provision was also a demonstration of Britain's leadership in the face of climate crisis. The British government seems content to squander what standing it had on the world stage to bring countries together to face this global emergency." The briefing note suggests a departure from Britain's previous plans to be at the forefront of addressing the challenges associated with climate change and biodiversity loss. When the funding was announced, the government departments involved called climate finance the top priority for government over the next decade and described the fund as a vital tool in the government's commitment to tackle climate change internationally. Meanwhile, the Foreign Office has declined to comment on the leak, but has pointed to Prime Minister Rishi Sunak's comments made at COP27 summit regarding climate finance. A spokesperson for the Foreign Office said, "We spent over £1.4 billion on international climate finance over the course of 2021-2022 financial year, supporting developing countries to reduce poverty and respond to causes and impacts of climate change. We will publish the latest annual figures in due course." Claims that the international climate finance pledge is being dropped are false. As the Prime Minister set out at the COP27 summit, the British government remains committed to spending £11.6 billion on international climate finance, and we continue to deliver on that pledge.
IRIB English Radio.